This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the manager of technology operations for Kenya's Electoral Commission has been found dead 9 days before national elections.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, 24 AU peacekeepers were killed yesterday in an ambush in southern Somalia. And in order to secure the northeast of the country, the Nigerian government says it's stepping up its military offensive against Boko Haram militants.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the manager of technology operations for Kenya's Electoral Commission has been found dead 9 days before national elections. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Officials Monday confirmed the death of Chris Masondo, who had been in charge of managing information technology systems for Kenya's Electoral Commission. Word of Masondo's death comes 3 days after he was last seen alive. Wafula Chebukati, chairman of Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, spoke from Nairobi's city mortuary.
There's no doubt that he was tortured and murdered. I know post-mortem will be done. In our mind as a commission, the only issue is who killed him and why.
Calls to Kenya's police spokesman for a response went unanswered. Chebukati urged all electoral employees to remain calm as they go through the national mourning period. He also made a request of the government.
And at this point in time, I demand from the government that they provide security for all employees of IBC for us to give Kenyans a free and fair election.
As manager of the IEBC's ICT operations, Masondo had in-depth knowledge of the technology being used in the upcoming elections. Chebukati also announced that Monday's launch of an electoral simulation exercise would be postponed until further notice. Fears of violence have been rising as Election Day draws near. Opposition parties have accused President Uhuru Kenyatta of seeking to rig the vote, while the president said his main opponent, former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, is trying to divide the nation along ethnic lines. Odinga lost the hotly disputed 2007 presidential election, which triggered violence that killed more than 1,100 people. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Up to 24 AU peacekeepers were killed yesterday in an ambush by Al-Shabaab militants in southern Somalia. 12 Ugandan soldiers were among them. 7 other Ugandan troops were wounded. A Ugandan Ministry of Defense statement today says the attack occurred in the lower Shabale region. At the time, the Ugandan troops were on a joint patrol with Somali forces. There's no official word yet on how many Somali forces may have been killed, but media reports now put the overall death at 24. Al-Shabaab militants claimed they killed nearly 40 soldiers. An AU military spokesman rejects that figure. In other news on Somalia, the U.S. military and the Somali government say an airstrike yesterday targeted and killed a senior member of the Al-Shabaab extremist group. Somali intelligence officials identified the target as Ali Mohamed Hussein, who served as Al-Shabaab's shadow governor for Mogadishu. Hussein, also known as Ali Jabal, was known for forcing Mogadishu businesses to donate money to the Islamist militants.
The Nigerian government says it's stepping up its military offensive against Boko Haram militants and promises to secure the northeast of the country. The news comes after last week's ambush of a military convoy and the abduction of 10 university workers and a suicide bomb attack on Friday. Reuters quotes the acting president's office as saying military efforts will be scaled up in Borno State to maintain a strong and effective control of the situation and secure lives and property. Friday night, at least 14 people were killed in a suicide bomb attack in the town of Dikwa in Borno State. Authorities say the attacker entered a building that housed people who had once fled the insurgency but later returned. Also, there's an update on last Tuesday's ambush of a military convoy near Maiduguri. AFP reports the death toll has risen to 69. It quotes an aid agency worker as saying that includes 19 soldiers and 33 civilians. 10 University of Maiduguri oil consultants were abducted in the attack. Three of the workers appeared in a video released by Boko Haram over the weekend.
The Africa Union Peace and Security Council has urged Cameroon to ensure the repatriation of Nigerian refugees fleeing Boko Haram be done on a voluntary basis. Moki Edwin Kenzaka joined the AU delegation for their visit to northern Cameroon and has this report.
Hundreds of refugees, most of them children, complain they are thirsty and hungry as they leave Cameroon on their way back to Nigeria. They are escorted by troops from the multinational joint task force fighting the Boko Haram insurgency. Cameroon Red Cross official Joseph Gisso is among the humanitarian staff accompanying the refugees. He says the military escort is necessary because Boko Haram fighters can surprise them at any moment.
Nous faisons également confiance à nos forces de l'ordre. Il n'y a pas de raison qu'on ait la peur dans le ventre.
He says they have confidence in the task force and strongly believe the killings will end soon. The soldiers told VOA the Boko Haram has been organizing sporadic attacks on a small scale since January. During the past 2 years, the regional force has retaken much of the territory Boko Haram once controlled. The number of Nigerian refugees repatriated from Cameroon has not been made public. In March, the governments of the two countries signed a tripartite agreement with UNHCR that stipulated the repatriations must be voluntary. In June, the UN Refugee Agency condemned what it called the Cameroonian government's forced repatriation of 887 Nigerian refugees to the border town of Banki. The United Nations said there had been other similar incidents. Cameroon's government has denied allegations of forced returns. Cameroon has struggled to meet the humanitarian needs of the approximately 115,000 Nigerian refugees within its borders, as well as an estimated 200,000 Cameroonians displaced by the conflict. Suicide attacks have picked up recently in border areas in Cameroon, with at least 30 attacks reported in June, including some targeting refugee camps. Far North Region of Cameroon Governor Midjiyawa Bakari has argued it would be better for refugees to go to safer localities in their own country. A delegation from the African Union visited the northern town of Marwa on Friday. The chairman of the African Union Peace and Security Council, Nigerian-born Ambassador Bankole Adeoye, led the delegation. He told VOA only refugees who chose to go back should be repatriated.
We want to thank the government and people of Cameroon, first, for hosting these refugees and coordinating all the necessary sectors with the United Nations agencies. We are suggesting and proposing that all refugees should be returned in safety and in dignity.
Aid agencies have also expressed concern about the conditions to which refugees are returning. UNHCR and Doctors Without Borders have warned food, water, and other resources are dangerously overstretched in border communities in Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Marua, Cameroon.
In South Africa, two white farmers pleaded not guilty today for allegedly shoving a black man into a coffin and threatening to set him on fire. The alleged incident happened last November. It was video recorded and posted online. Although apartheid officially ended in 1994, South Africa, like many countries, still has not come to grips with its racist past. Reporter Delia Robertson is following developments. From Johannesburg, she spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the significance of the case.
It's very important, Joe, because it's symptomatic of ongoing racism in South Africa that people in this country just don't seem to be able to leave behind them. There are numerous cases not unlike this. In this instance, they put a 27-year-old worker into a coffin. They were accusing him of having committed a crime. They were trying to force him to confess. They threatened to pour petrol on the coffin and set it alight. They threatened to put a snake into the coffin with him. Just viewing the video, which one of them apparently shot, and it was then available on social media and ended up on YouTube, it's just heartrending. This young man was extremely distressed, and he was crying. He really believed that they were going to do these things. They were threatening.
Delia, just so our audience gets an idea of what happened there, how was there even a coffin at the scene of this incident?
Well, that's not clear yet. Those details haven't yet emerged in court. The trial is yet to get underway. The two gentlemen have pleaded not guilty. It's really hard to know how people's minds work and how they manage to get hold of things of this nature. The coffin in the video, if you look at it, looks fairly cheap. It's difficult to know how they came to be.
Delia, is this fairly common in South Africa?
Racism is still very, very common in South Africa. There's no question about it. There's a lot of ongoing daily kind of grind of racism that doesn't harm anyone physically or sort of damage their lives in any ways. There's this constant stream of racism on social media. If you go to restaurants and in public places, you often see it. Also, there's a terrible type of racism that becomes very physical and dangerous. In fact, earlier this year, a young worker was killed after he was said to have stolen a sunflower from a farm. He was taken on the back of a small truck. The two men involved, white men involved, said they were taking him to the police station and that he fell off the truck and broke his neck. But there's an eyewitness who counters that story and says they beat him up first, they dragged him, they forced him onto the truck, they were just really abusive. That case is also still ongoing. The two alleged perpetrators are out on bail. And when they were granted bail, it caused riots in the small town where this event had occurred. And houses and businesses were looted and burnt and things like that. But in addition to that, there's kind of endemic racism. At schools, you have teachers who abuse black children in their classes. You have schools that set ridiculous policies about what kind of hairstyles black students can have at school.
Delia, how is this happening considering that apartheid officially ended in 1994 and whites are a minority in South Africa?
Although the ANC wants to legislate against racism, I don't think you can change people by law. I think that it requires fundamental education. In many instances, that doesn't happen. And you have older people who continue to speak in a racist way, who continue to act in a racist way. And then younger people are learning from that sort of behavior. But I think, Joe, as you know, you see in other countries all over the world, including the United States, you see it in countries in Europe and that sort of thing, where democracies are very old and you still get incidents of violence and other sorts of reprehensible behavior towards people of color.
That was reporter Delia Robertson in Johannesburg. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. 9 days before national elections, the manager of technology operations for Kenya's Electoral Commission has been found dead. 24 African Union peacekeepers are reported killed in an ambush in southern Somalia. And the Nigerian government says it's stepping up its military offensive against Boko Haram militants. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Malawi police have issued an arrest warrant for former President Joyce Banda in connection with the Cashgate scandal. More than 70 people have been arrested in the scandal, including government officials. A police statement says Banda allegedly abused the powers of her office and allegedly took part in money laundering. The Cashgate scandal broke in 2013. Suspects are accused of stealing more than $30 million through phony construction deals.
Sluggish economic growth and other factors have weakened the quality of government policies and institutions in sub-Saharan Africa. That's the conclusion of the World Bank's yearly country policy and institutional assessment analysis for Africa. The report rated 38 countries according to several criteria such as economic and public sector management, structural policies, and social protections for the poor. Rwanda, Senegal, and Kenya came out on top of the survey. Others that have shown improvement include Cameroon, Madagascar, and Sudan. Countries that do well on the scale have greater access to zero-interest financing loans and grants in the bank's financing arm, the International Development Association, or IDA. Punchuhan Paul is the lead economist for the World Bank Africa region. She told the reporter William Eagle that last year was tough for many African countries, with a drop in commodity prices, drought, and stagnation in global trade.
There were a fairly strong, as you'd say, headwinds that were impacting a range of countries. And then there were domestic issues in some countries. In some cases, policy uncertainty. In others, it could be security and instability. It could be the drought, which had implications on food markets and food prices, and therefore inflation. And in some countries, the drought had an impact on generation of power. There were challenging conditions. And in a large number of countries, macroeconomic management became quite complex and challenging, and we saw slippage in several countries.
Speaking of those countries who met some of these challenges head on and did well, which countries were among those that met the challenge and succeeded?
I would say that the countries that managed to keep their scores relatively high, and Rwanda would be one of them, were able to meet some of these challenges, which is not to say that fiscal deficits didn't weaken, but there were an effort to prioritize spending, to rein in expenditure overruns, to contain wage bills, and to address inefficient subsidies, as well as efforts to strengthen tax administration. And here, using technology, you know, so it is easier for citizens and firms to make payments using technologies, electronic filing, reducing the number of procedures and the hours it takes to make payments, as well as strengthening public financial management, you know, better monitoring of the budget, better fiscal reporting, and stronger audit systems. So all of these are, I think, things that countries have taken.
In this survey, how did some of the continent's largest economies rank? I'm thinking of Nigeria and South Africa.
One important thing to bear in mind, Bill, is that we are only looking at IDA borrowers and countries that are eligible for IDA, which is the concessional arm of the World Bank. So it provides concessional resources and grants. South Africa would not be included in that. It's not an IDA borrower. Nigeria is there. Nigeria saw a slippage overall in economic management. There was policy uncertainty. There was segmentation of the market for exchange rates. This had implications on both investor confidence, but also on the non-resource-rich or non-oil sector. And the country did see a drop in the value of its currency, as well as a rise in inflation. So there were issues on the economic management side. There was slippage, which tended to pull down the score of Nigeria. So it did drop to a score of 3.3.
Another country where we've heard of a lot of progress going on is Ethiopia, especially in its capital, Addis. Was Ethiopia among those countries that fared fairly well in terms of improving and adjusting its institutions and economic policies?
I think Ethiopia did manage to improve in terms of economic management, because I think they were able to contain the fiscal deficit. They went through, remember, the country was hit by a drought last year, and they were able to contain the fiscal deficit. So there was an improvement in that area. They also have made, I think, strides in social protection. So the score for Ethiopia, it held up. It has a score of 3.5, which in the context of African countries is on the relatively high side.
When you mentioned that it had made some progress in social protection, are we speaking in terms of a safety net or the inclusion of women?
I'm talking about safety nets, you know, the main form in which social protection is provided to the more vulnerable and poor. And in Ethiopia, they have a fairly strong safety net, have been able to respond to the climatic shock. Actually, this is one of the things we see across Africa, that there are about 46 countries now in the region that do have at least one safety net program at the national level.
That was Puntjuhan Paul, lead economist for the World Bank Africa region. She was speaking to reporter William Eagle.
France's foreign minister is visiting three Sahel countries. Florence partly is promising French troops in the region that they'll have enough support to battle militant extremists. While visiting Chad yesterday, she told troops that they will have the necessary means to carry out their mission. There are about 4,000 French troops in the region. Partly is visiting the Sahel along with the German defense minister.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wojtek Zorniak, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll preview the August 8th Kenyan presidential race between incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and former Kenyan Prime Minister Raila Odinga. The latest public opinion polls say the ballot is too close to call. That's on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Bratty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.